From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, after COVID-19, what will the Texas economy look like? Can we use the reboot to recreate a Texas that is more robust and successful for all Texans? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Governor Greg Abbott is trying to restart the Texas economy with the relaxation of social distancing guidelines and allowing many businesses to reopen to the public. Unfortunately, COVID-19 remains in the population and continues to spread. The death toll rate in Texas is climbing. The fact of the matter is, gun-toting right-wing protesters can't intimidate a deadly virus into not being a deadly virus. Just the opposite. The demands to reopen the economy just reopens the population to the spread of the virus. Public health experts agree that there will be other waves of the coronavirus until there is a vaccine, and that won't happen for at least another year. So what will Texas look like when we finally get on the other side of this pandemic? What lessons will we have learned? Will we have the political leadership in place to move the state's economy forward so we can create more jobs, security, and opportunity that Texans have come to expect? Policy experts from the Lyndon B. Johnson School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin and the Hobby School of Public Affairs at the University of Houston have issued a 9-point playbook with their vision for rebuilding a more equitable and inclusive future Texas. The report, A Playbook for Resiliency, Creating Opportunity for All Texans, is co-authored by Kirk Watson, founding dean of the Hobby School of Public Affairs, and Stephen Pedigo, professor of practice and director of the LBJ School's Urban Lab. It calls for state and local leaders to evaluate past policies and unequal growth. I spoke with Stephen Pedigo about the Playbook for Resiliency.
One of the things that is critical to do now is to start to think about how not only do we want to reopen Texas, but how do we build a better Texas? And so as we think about our businesses opening, as we think about our workforce going back to work, as our schools think about opening, as our universities start to play a role, you know, one of the things that I think Senator Watson and I do in this report is say, well, what are the principles that can make us a better Texas and create a greater, more inclusive Texas for all Texans? And so now is the time to start thinking about that, not putting it off in the future.
As we are looking at many of the big challenges dealing with COVID-19 and how it's impacting our population and some of our failure to respond to this adequately. Many people keep telling me this is a problem that we already had, but the coronavirus is casting a spotlight on this problem that we had previously. Is it looking at these issues and trying to figure out we need to patch that up for future catastrophes, but also so that Texas can flourish when we're not dealing with a catastrophe?
Look, I think as a state, we've done a lot of things really good. In fact, I mean, if you look at the report, you'll find that, you know, we were one of the best places for investments. We're one of the best business climates across the country. We've been one of the greatest places for economic development investment for outside companies back into Texas. But I think you're a little bit right, and that is that as you look, start to sort of pull up the hood and start to look a little bit deeper, we as a state, we have some challenges. A significant part of our workforce works in low-end service-based jobs, you know, more than 50% of our workforce. You know, we've got 5 million Texans who don't have health insurance. We have got a number of rural communities that are falling further and further behind of the Texas Triangle as the Texas Triangle sort of continues to power the state forward. And so, you know, this crisis has given us an opportunity to think about the Texas that we want going forward. And more importantly, not just that, but how do we do it in a way that if there is another shock, God help us if we all have to live through another pandemic, but if there's a shock, you know, another economic shock, a natural disaster, how can we ensure that our residents, that our enterprises, and the state as a whole can weather that shock? And so, you know, in the report, we call for several things to think that through, right? Ensuring that we're diversifying our industries, investing back into public health as a driver, not only for the well-being of residents, but also for a way to think about how we can revitalize some of our communities as a driver for economic development. How do we protect essential-based workers, the service-based workers that we now have become so important in this crisis? And then finally, infrastructure. We are a state that is growing very, very fast. And we're a state that has to really think about the types of infrastructure investments that we need. You know, there's a great saying in economic development that if you don't manage the growth will manage you. And so Texas is at that point. Many of our metros are at that point where we're starting to say, how can we better manage this growth with the types of investments that we are that are needed to really push us forward?
You said if another shock. I mean, some say Texas did get two shocks. One of them is the coronavirus. The other one is the collapse of the price of oil.
We did. Yeah. I mean, and in fact, that's one of the things we write about in this report is that oil, as you know, dropped to sort of negative, I think it was negative $38. And it is absolutely critical upon us to really, if we want to maintain the idea that we are the knowledge, the energy capital of the U.S., it's going to require some diversifications. And so, you know, in the report, Senator Watson and I say, look, you know, let's start to think about alternative energy. You know, a lot of folks have said, let's do it for climate reasons. And that's really important. In fact, if you talk to my undergraduates and my graduate students at UT Austin and other universities, climate change is an important piece for them. But more importantly for Texas, it is that energy is a central part of who we are. It's part of our economic portfolio. So let's really gain take the mantle around alternative energy. You know, we're already the fifth leading producer of wind energy in the world. You know, first in the country. You know, we already have over 100,000 jobs tied to solar. And so let's not just sort of not think about alternative energy as a viable sector because we have the great seeds here for that to be for a way that we can transition some of our, you know, workers that maybe have been displaced from the oil production industry or in the oil patches around the state as thinking through how their skills are transformable. Now, that requires skill investment. It requires think about how we use our incentive dollars to invest in those types of companies. But the ground, you know, the groundwork is there. The foundation is there, man. If I was leading economic development for the state of Texas, this would absolutely be a sector I'd be going all in on because there's great opportunity here for us to take this and lead this.
You have 9 major points that you think are essential for getting Texas to create the opportunity for all Texans in the future on the other side of the coronavirus. Number one, which I imagine is the one that you want to emphasize the greatest because it's number one, build partnerships instead of rivalries. And that's an interesting one to highlight.
Yeah, look, I mean, this is a state I think it's no secret that city and county leaders and state leaders have not played well together in the sandbox. I think that a lot of us can acknowledge that. State leaders would acknowledge that. City and county leaders would acknowledge that. And I think when we are dealing with a crisis, a public health crisis, one of the things I think that was heartening here is that around the public health crisis at the beginning of this, our city and county leaders really worked pretty well together, particularly with the state. In fact, the state kind of followed the city and county's lead. But as we think about the economic recovery and we think about the reopening process, it's going to take the cooperation of state and city officials together. You know, as we write in the report, city officials and county officials have that great on the ground sort of expertise, and state officials give you that sort of larger perspective. And, you know, in a state where we value small C conservative government, it makes sense to ensure that local leaders and city officials have a seat at the table as we're thinking about this strategy. And that's the political piece to it. The other thing that I think that makes us very unique comparatively to other states is that we also have to build we have to be a state that really thinks about cross-sectoral partnerships. You know, our business community has to play a big role in this. Our philanthropic community plays an important role in this, and our nonprofit sector. And so one of the things that we say is, like, look, let's build relationships across those sectors. Let's build relationships across city and local. And then the other thing is, like, even our regional communities, our smaller communities, many smaller rural communities across the state of Texas, many cities and larger cities and their small suburban communities, they too can play a better job. It's not winner take all. We have to think about how we can really come together and build good collaborative cohesion to move this thing forward.
How do you incentivize cities and other parts of the state rather than fighting against each other for limited resources and jobs? How do you get them to work together?
look, I think the state can create incentive dollars for joint economic development planning. I mean, I know that sounds geeky and that sounds wonky perhaps to the average listener, but you know, if the state is encouraging that type of planning together, that's one way. You know, funding economic development organizations that are cross-sector, that's an important piece to this. You know, I think taking economic development, taking the politics out of economic development in a lot of cities across our state, you know, our city council members and our elected leaders really lead some of the economic development and make some of the key economic development decisions. You know, one of the things about the practice is maybe we have the professionals do that. Maybe we kind of pull the politics out of economic development. Economic development is a long-term game. Right. That's one of the things that's critically important about this report. And it's something I tell all of my students at the LBJ school is that if you are in the process of city building and community building, remember, this is a long term game. And so we have to have the organization and the vision and the planning process in place that really sort of sees that long vision game and not in those 2 years and sometimes 4 year cycles that we sometimes get involved in. So, look, I think we can do it through incentivizing, through planning, and through building, you know, cross-sector organizations that can do this.
Thinking about preparing for the economy in the post-coronavirus Texas, we have to be thinking about what are the needs for Texas at that time. People are coming through this, and they're going to be changed. There's going to be an adaptation. We're getting more accustomed to Zoom and not meeting in person, working from home. Things are going to be a little different.
Yeah, look, I mean, if we all think that we're going back to 2009, 2020 pre-pandemic, I think that's going to be it's going to be a rude awakening. You know, that said, I think we're still at the point of not knowing which some of these trends will stick and which ones of these will go away. At the end of the day, we know how to build vibrant, robust economies. The building of vibrant and robust economies, the creating of opportunity for people, is the gathering of people and ideas and enterprises together. It's ED 101. It's the clustering effect. And so, you know, that won't go away. But cities are, you know, but there will be opportunities that I think that were presented by this, and that is perhaps that we have a greater amount of people that will do sort of remote work, right? Not every day, but maybe some people will do more remote work. And so maybe that frees up creates some opportunities around lifestyle advantages. Maybe that creates opportunity for many of our smaller communities across the state that's invested in quality of place to really sort of position themselves as a great place to live and a great place to do remote work and a great place to raise your family. So there's opportunity there as well. So, you know, I think that those are some trends that we see. Look, the way that small businesses and our main streets are done, those possibly are going to be completely transformed depending on how those, you know, which businesses come out on the other side of this. So those are all issues I think that will transform us. But, you know, look, the good thing about this is you're right in your original question, and that is that one of the things that a crisis does for you is expose some of your weaknesses. And so if this is an opportunity for us to evaluate the things that Texas have done well, but also some of the challenges, you know, lack of safety nets for some of our service-based workers, the need to have, you know, a continuum of care around health care, you know, the call to really invest back into the skills of Texans. You know, more than 1.5 million Texans now are unemployed because they were tied to many of these service-based jobs that were displaced. If we can go back and think about, use this opportunity as a call to action to invest back in Texans, invest back in people, I see that as a good thing. And an opportunity for that we shouldn't squander and that we shouldn't put off and that we should be thinking about now and addressing now.
It seems to me that one of the biggest inefficiencies that we have in our economy is in our education system. And maybe now we're getting an opportunity to sort of work things out. Our education system was grounded in Industrial Revolution era way of teaching classes, has not really embraced the information age. We had to put everyone in a single room and line them up in rows and speak to them. And a lot of that could be done remotely, and it could be automated, and it could be sped up depending on the wants and needs of individuals. Is this something that we could embrace in Texas to, we know we have a lot of people who need to be educated, and we don't have a lot of education dollars, and maybe we could come out of this with a revolution in being able to do that.
I like how you think. I think that's awesome. I would say absolutely. Look, I mean, we have an opportunity to transform our workforce development system in the state of Texas. It's a very efficient system. I mean, it's a pretty efficient system, but it's a system that some, unfortunately lacks scale for the given the size of the state that we are. You know, 29 million Texans. So one of the opportunities around workforce development is absolutely to think through how we use technology to scale that. How do we think about our the types of programs that we've been offering for a long time? Much of the things that I've worked with cities all over the country about has been about how can you rethink about your workforce training programs where they're not necessarily 2-year or 4-year or 6-year degrees, but maybe they're short six weeks or 3-week technology or even on the job type of training systems to get people on ramped into the workforce in a much faster way. So I think it is going to, as we think about workforce development, lots of opportunity for us here, lots of opportunity about the way that we think about the courses that we offer, particularly tied to maybe some new growth opportunities in like healthcare and alternative sector. One, two, the types of way we offer the program in terms of is it a short program, is it a long program, and then three, the role of technology. I think look, I don't think technology solves us all. I don't think I've never been the person that says technology is the savior for everything, but technology-enabled workforce development, where we can scale it, particularly for a state that is as large as we are and as big as we are in terms of our population, will be really, really critically important, especially in a time when we know that the economic challenges, the economic impact for this is going to be pretty tough.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and I'm speaking with Stephen Pettigo from the LBJ Schools Urban Lab. He's co-authored a playbook for the Texas economy after COVID-19. Schools have been closed, and many of the students and children have been told to go home and learn there. There's been a lot of criticism about the lack of equality when it comes to access to broadband,
both in urban and rural areas, right? Not just rural areas, but urban areas, right? Too. I mean, that is, online online education is something that I've thought a lot. I think a lot about being a faculty member at UT. It is absolutely true that the broadband issue has a significant impact on the way that we can do online learning. And so we've made some investments in that. Last legislature, the state invested in rural broadband. We know that the Department of Agriculture has done some of that in some of rural Texas as well. But look, we know that we still need to build that infrastructure up. It is a critically important piece of that. But the other thing to that is, online education is not an equal platform. We could all have great access to the broadband, but a lot of times the way a child learns or the way an adult learns, the way a college student learns, and the way that it can be different, it has to be tailored a bit. And then also household circumstances play a significant role here. A lot of my students are multi-generational households, smaller households, and so those externalities of those of that quote unquote work remote or learn from home have an impact there as well. So, look, I think that technology can help us think through about maybe the way that we innovate, the way we think about programs that can be personalized and tailored. But it's not a one size fits all model for everybody.
In the new Texas after the pandemic, will people be thinking about, will we be shell-shocked by what happened in this pandemic and preparing for it, making sure that we do have secure supply chains, making sure that we do have robust economies and redundancies so that we're not stuck in the same situation that we're in right now?
I hope so. I hope that as a state, as residents and businesses, we're thinking that through. I hope that as a state, legislature will only meets a couple times a year. I hope that we're being forward thinking in the next legislative agenda and we're thinking about resiliency. A long time, a lot of this idea was that if you can just create fast growth and high growth, you can build robust economies. But I think one of the things that this pandemic has shown us is that unless you're addressing some of the resiliency issues, unless you're addressing some of the equity issues, the vulnerabilities, the affordability issues, the lack of diversification, then you really put yourself up to be for potential for great shock. And so, going forward, I hope that we are investing back in Texas enterprises, helping them scale, helping them think about succession planning, helping to get the technical services. You know, hope we're investing back in people, helping residents who are maybe underserved or underskilled get the skills that they can do to participate in this fast-growing innovation economy. Yes, Texas is growing a big service economy, but on the flip side of that is we hear a lot about our production-based economy and oil and manufacturing and things to that affair, but the other second fastest growing sector in Texas is our knowledge sector. And those are great jobs. Those are jobs that pay high living wages, but we got to get people the skills to participate, that we're everyday Texans can take advantage of those jobs. So investing back in people and then creating those communities and that ecosystem and that infrastructure that can help us advance all of these principles forward. You know, the capital investments in physical infrastructure, but as you mentioned earlier, the really important necessary investments that have to happen in digital as well.
And right now, we're seeing businesses go under, people losing their jobs. Important parts of the economy are being culled. We don't want to start eating our seed corn, and so that when it's time to bounce back, Texas is not in a good position to do that. How do we ensure that we're ready to bounce back when it's time to do that?
Invest in people, invest in economic development. You know, there's lots of folks across lots of cities and counties across the United States that are cutting budgets now, cutting staffing, cutting economic development, cutting essential services. And the thing that I would say is that one of the great things about being in the state of Texas is we have a strong rainy day fund. We have the opportunity that will allow us to think about future investments to take advantage of perhaps the challenges that some other places are experiencing. So investing now, continuing that investment to continue to think about how do we push forward, how do we think about the new types of sectors that will grow our economy. You know, those are the types of things that are really, really critical as we move forward, I think.
Are the big Fortune 500 companies going to be looking at states and seeing which ones are ready to hit the new economy?
Fortune 500 companies don't move, generally speaking. And not to be a protagonist. Look, I think that if you want to build real economic development, the idea that big Fortune 500 companies or big Fortune 100 companies make big moves, that doesn't really happen as much anymore as we know. Now, there's occasional, right? The Amazon of the world will kick out an HQ process. Occasionally, you know, we'll see like a company like Aetna or GE make a move. That happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But it's rare. If we're really wanting to build a Texas going forward, man, what we really should be doing is looking at those medium-sized firms, maybe those smaller firms that have that potential for scale, and going all in on the investment of those types of companies. You know, looking to those companies to see what are their supply chains gaps, what are their talent skill gaps, where can we have them make investments across the states. Economic development today, in the world that we live in, is talent-driven, it's people-driven, but it's also expansion-driven more so than anything, than attraction. And so, you know, this is a state, we are a state that continues to play the attraction game. We've done it fairly effectively with our business climate, but one of the things that we know is that piece of attraction could be paused for a bit. And so really thinking about what are the gaps that we see as we look across the state in our particular sectors, what are the gaps that we see in biosciences, what are the gaps that we see in some of our high-tech manufacturing up near the Fort Worth area, what are the types of the gaps that we see in our supply chain in the area of like Texas Arcana, what are the gaps that we see along the border economies that particularly, frankly, are unfortunately mostly service-based driven, how can we start to build investments in firms that have those innovations? Those are the types of things that I think we should be thinking through. And then finally, coming back to the idea that one of the great things about being in the great state of Texas is that we have one of the most robust university systems in the entire world. You know, three of our tier one institutions are among the top 25 recipients of research and development dollars and commercialization dollars. So, you know, taking the science and the technology that comes out of Texas A&M, UT Austin, the MDS, the Answer Cancer Center, and spreading that and helping to think about how we can move those and commercialize some of that thought leadership to commercialize some of that research into real products and real business opportunities is a real opportunity for the state of Texas that could really and essentially grow homegrown businesses here that can employ Texans.
As you were talking about, businesses moving and Some could, some aren't. But I couldn't stop thinking about Tesla when you were talking about that. Is it?
Yeah.
You know, and Elon Musk.
You and every other Texan, by the way.
I mean, is that something that getting these types of new companies to come here?
Yeah, for sure. And look, Tesla is an alternative energy company. Essentially, is an alternative energy company, right? If you think that through, right? I mean, it is. It is what I loved about Texas, about the, you know, Governor Abbott and other folks tweeting and sort of saying, come on, Tesla, was what they're actually doing was promoting alternative energy in the state of Texas, because that is essentially an alternative energy company, a battery company, as we know. But look, I think that can happen. People can be attracted here to business climate and those types of things. But when you look at very specialized businesses and enterprise like that, it requires very specialized skills. It requires very specialized capability. There is a reason why that despite a very challenging business climate in the state of California, that Tesla is located in Fremont, California. It's because it has access to Silicon Valley. It has access to the skills. It has access to the research laboratories that are there that are important for moving that type of enterprise forward. And so, again, this comes back to we as Texans. Making investments. We can't just continue to promote our business climate. It is great. It's wonderful. That's great. But how do we ensure that we're making more than just a cost advantage argument, that we're saying, look, come to Texas because we have the capabilities around advanced manufacturing. Come to Texas because we understand how to build clean energy and clean batteries. Come to Texas because we have the building codes and the land availability that can help you get up to scale really quickly. Those are the types of messages that we should be sending to Tesla and sending to others around the state. But again, that requires us to think beyond just the idea of opening our businesses and looking to a recovery that's going to require us to be a bit more resilient.
But also Tesla and Elon Musk, they're disruptors, and they do things differently. Like the way they sell vehicles is not with dealerships. Energy is not oil-based. You know, it's electric cars. These are things that many in Texas aren't ready to embrace. They actually fight against when they're very powerful in the legislature. Many of the things that you're asking about, they're on your list of 9 bullet points, are
sure.
Disruptive. And we still have a vested interest that don't want to see things shaken up to that extent.
I think that, yeah, look, I mean, here's the reality about Texas. The reality about Texas is that I think that some of that argument around policies and the stronghold of holding on to the frontier mentality and a legacy of who we were, you know, 2 decades ago continues to hold true. And look, it will be interesting to see what happens with the legislature elections this, you know, in the next year as demographics keep changing. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at the state of Texas, is 9 out of every 10 Texans lives in a metropolitan or urban area. You know, 9 out of every $10 that are attracted through venture capital dollars happens in 3 metropolitan areas. You know, 78% of the entire economy is driven by the 3 metropolitan areas. And so we're going to continue as a state to become urban. We're going to continue as a state to become metropolitan. We're going to continue to be a state that will become more diverse. And so what we're saying in this report is that, look, let's embrace those opportunities. Let's embrace those advantages which are coming. And again, if we don't embrace them, then in fact the growth, the change, all of the challenges that I've outlined here are going to actually control us.
Stephen Pettigo is the director of the LBJ School's Urban Lab. He co-authored with former State Senator Kirk Watson, the founding dean of the Hobby School of Public Affairs, the report, A Playbook for Resiliency, Creating Opportunity for All Texans. The report looks at how Texas leaders could rebuild the Texas economy after the COVID-19 pandemic. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.